It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
Well, we've said all along this was going to be an election for the ages, and it is not disappointing at this point, I'll tell you. And you always know there's one more thing that's going to come down the pike here. I mean, what else could possibly happen? You'll have to be asking yourself at this very moment. And I know a lot of people are. And that really is what we're talking about here now. We are on the eve, just weeks away, or inside of a month now, of the election. And of course, with the COVID announcement in the White House and in a lot of GOP circles, actually, and the president more so, it is a moment of pause for the nation as people are looking for answers on this. A lot of information to talk about there. Also, the debates. You see the first one, there's more coming. One of the things I talk about all the time on these debates is why the moderators are always so far to the left. And this is another one coming up in debate number two. If that comes off, we've got some serious things to talk about in this debate process, I believe. Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. It is Malcolm here along with Michael Johns. And so we have a barrel load of news here to get to. Michael, let's just start here at the top with, wow, President Trump and all of the circles now, senators that have it, the spokespeople for the GOP, the RNC, and it just really has permeated now throughout the GOP ranks there. But yet, you know, what you're going to be asking at this point is, how do you play a campaign like this? You know, I've been thinking about this. You know, you can't really stop things. I mean, there's a campaign in full swing right now. You can't stop and say, hold on, we're going to take a pause here and we're going to push this back a month. I mean, that's not really possible. Although you do wonder sometimes where here, how do you mitigate losses, really? Or could this be an opportunity, potentially, I think is the question. What do you think?
Well, I think you start with the fact that it's immensely saddening, and we want to see and are hoping and praying for a speedy recovery of the president, first lady, all others impacted. There's a good lot of incredibly great public servants who've been diagnosed in recent days, and we want to see them come back for a speedy recovery. So it's in all sincerity, no rhetoric. I mean, a lot of prayers go out to the president to lift him up through this. Now, to get into the obvious fact that nothing's going to happen in October of 2020 that doesn't have an immense political dimension to it. And I think you and I have really strived very hard to provide analysis, and it's both objective, factually true, but also cutting edge. And I sort of look at this from as a former presidential speechwriter and as someone who has done White House messaging in an election year. Okay. And I think the conclusion that I've reached is obviously this is a very destructive development. It gives Biden ultimately some degree of credibility on some of the things that he said potentially, and they are going to exploit it. They will say they're not going to exploit it. Well, they simultaneously exploit it. They already said they were going to discontinue negative advertising on the president. Sure enough, today, negative advertising is still blasting out all over Facebook and elsewhere. So they have not proven people of their words.
Doesn't that tell you they lie like hell all the time? What you just said, listen to what you just said. They had that big announcement out there saying, okay, there's going to be no negative advertising. And then you're saying they're negative advertising. Well, they're liars.
Yeah, look, so this, I got that news like first thing this morning. It's shared in our, collective communications. And let me just say by this hour, it's already known to the Biden campaign that we're aware of it and that we've been critical of it. So it will be intriguing to see, are they even responsive to that criticism? Are they lying? Yeah, they're liars. I mean, as Tucker Carlson once, I remember him saying, they're professional liars. Sure. They've obtained you hang around for nearly half a century at high levels in D.C. with no policy accomplishments. What is your ultimate accomplishment?
That's a great point.
The fact that you've been able to maintain the positional authority that he's been able to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our message, I think, to the American people is you can't reward a person like that with another 4 years at the highest level office. Continuing on, just kind of as I've looked at it, and this is, you know, in my early communication on it, how I've looked at it is that I do believe the American people watched very closely on Friday, when this diagnosis was announced, and saw in the radical left and even within the Democrat Party a certain degree of glee at the president's condition. Many consciously sought to not present that, but you know it was there, it was there almost like, see, he had it coming, he deserves it.
That's right.
And then in glaring ways, politically and in the entertainment areas, and in some of these really big far left voices, I mean, you outright at people, you know, hoping that he dies. I think the American people, regardless of political persuasion, were again reawakened yesterday to the fact that these are the people that are going to be a mouthpiece and are going to comprise the base of a Biden administration if he actually would prevail in November. Mm-hmm. And I think as these street riots have been, that should be immensely terrifying to most Americans. And I think that has reinjected some reality back into this. I think the American people saw what they needed to see in the radical left's reaction. I go on further, and I wanted to say this is all based on sort of medical conjecture and not anything else. But you know, if you follow President Bolsonaro in Brazil, President Trump's not the first head of state to be diagnosed with COVID. Obviously, at Boris Johnson in the UK, he had a very, you know, his condition got very serious. He was in the ICU for a few days, ultimately discharged, back on the job, doing great now. That I'm looking more at the diagnosis of President Bolsonaro in Brazil, who was diagnosed and recovered within a span of a few weeks. And when he came out of it, his popularity soared. The Brazilian people they have a divisive political culture there too. I mean, he's got really strong base supporters and he's got his opponents. But when the country really faced the reality of their leader, their head of state, their elected president facing a potentially fatal condition, perspectives changed. They became sympathetic with this man that they'd even previously been condemning. And so I think, is there an upside here? Is it possible that one of the greatest political comeback plots in American history has now written itself, and that there is a road out of this from a health condition for President Trump and from a political condition? Because if you critique the messaging of the president, since this hit us early this year, one of the great criticisms has been that he hasn't seemed to relate with the people who've been affected with it. He hasn't had enough empathy or sympathy maybe it hasn't come across as well in his messaging. Mm-hmm. He is now going to emerge from this at some point, whether that's 24 hours or 24 days, with an ability to communicate saying, I have gone through this. Mm-hmm. I experienced it. I had the downs and I had the ups, and I understand and sympathize and empathize with every American, regardless of the clinical outcome, who has gone through this. And is that not present him with really an ultimate comeback story combined with all these accomplishments, including his management of the pandemic?
And when you say comeback, you're talking about comeback within the COVID virus itself, that narrative, that story. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that as far as a political narrative of re-seizing control of this debate, which I think has, let's be honest. I mean, he's not on offense right now. He's on defense and treating this condition. What I'm saying in a speculative way is that if he's able to emerge, as I think he will,
Right.
And I think most say, hey, well, certainly the reports from his treating physician, which is not a political statement. This is an ethically bound statement. It's important for American people to read. This isn't the press secretary saying, hey, he's doing great. This is a licensed physician who could lose his license for misrepresenting his condition. It says no organ involvement, no breathing difficulties. Has had no need for no respiratory issues, which would be the biggest concern.
But there is a lot of messaging out there that would say otherwise to what you're saying. And I don't want to debate that, but there are a lot of reports in the last 24 hours of all kinds of things about that. But beyond all that, let's talk about the messaging with what you put out there right now. The opportunity, you mentioned Bolsonaro and what he was able to accomplish. Okay, great. And you're right. We've seen Boris Johnson and what he came back and what he did there. You know, the messaging is so vitally important right now. President Trump has been a hands-on president with his messaging, very much so. In fact, for quite a while, there were no press briefings. He was controlling that narrative when he would jump out of the helicopter or the plane ride every time, you know, on Air Force One or whatever. But that was happening for a while. He's very much a control freak with his messaging. And because he, rightfully so, he believes he is the best voice and representation of his message. Right now, there is this opportunity maybe to, like you say, you know, here's what worries me. Let me just tell you right now. What worries me is really the messaging and the media. Here's what's going to be the problem for the American people, Michael. We're going to have our work cut out for us in the next 30 days. And certainly we are here at America Out Loud and the work that you and I are doing and the work that so many are doing here at our network and in other places as well with strong conservative patriotic messaging who care, who want to see this victory here for the movement and for Trump. And it is going to come back to the messaging.
And the country.
But what worries me so much is the messaging and the bad information. You know, the president, I don't think his messaging was off at all on COVID. He's a very powerful message. He had a very uplifting message for the nation that we can do this. We can get over it. He never was about playing victim. He was about playing victor. And I love that in a leader. He is an absolute leader in the way he puts that out there. And I applaud that.
Right.
Now, listen, the Democrats don't like that. Let's be clear. They've never liked that because why, Michael? Well, let me tell you why. Because they are the poster child for the word victim. If you're looking the dictionary and the victim, you'll see the Socialist Democrat Party described right there with that. How do you like that?
Well, and they're very prone toward exploiting any perceived political weakness. You know, if you're not in the arena leading the messaging on a complicated issue like this, it's very easy to kind of look in your rearview mirror and be filled with criticism. Mm-hmm. Who are these Democrats really holding up as saying this person or that person, even a clinician who's been spot on this whole thing? This is a virus that was completely unknown to even top specialists in this country before January. This was a president who acted in such decisive ways, it cannot be repeated enough, that he earned the criticism of China, the World Health Organization, the Democrat Party, and the media for imposing a ban on individuals who likely could have contracted the disease from entering the United States. To sit back in retrospect, as Biden suggests, but never really provides any details on, that this president was not immediately on top of this completely ignores the timeline of events.
Yeah.
We had really not before December 31 any demonstrable evidence that there was even a clear pandemic arising in China, much less here. And immediately the president went into action. In as early as January 3, he was trying to dispatch CDC experts to Wuhan to evaluate and understand what we were facing. And communist China, obviously, hopefully now well known, blocked our efforts to do that, as they blocked the World Health Organization's efforts to enter the country. They did not want to cooperate in allowing this.
And let me jump in and tell you something. At the last debate, Biden said that didn't happen. He actually said that Trump was not, that he refused to talk to Xi Jinping. But did you see he said that at the debate? That's what he said right there.
That debate almost requires, like a segment by segment analysis. So I think you and I could sit here for 5 hours and go through it. And when we got through it, I think several points would emerge from it. Number one, that the moderation of it was very weak and slanted very heavily toward Biden in the sense that there were follow-ups for every one of Trump's statements. It was, yeah, but. And then when it came to what Biden said, these statements, many of which were just demonstrably untrue, were not even asked. And we'll get to the debate, but I'm just saying, right. You know, and then there, the questions that were really, I think, centerpiece questions were not being asked. Trump is very astute on these issues. He could see that right away. And if you watch the first 10 minutes, he's very reserved. And then he starts interjecting because it's clear these topics aren't coming out of Chris Wallace's mouth, which was when the temperament began to change.
Right. But to the point of what I'm talking about with Xi Jinping and the president, he defended that. But Biden tried to call him out on that statement to say that he refused to contact Xi Jinping and get the corporation to visit Wuhan and all of that. And that's a bold-faced lie.
That's utterly untrue. At every level of our federal government, president of the United States down to CDC officials, there was communication with China. In fact, if you go back, I believe the CDC experts actually arrived at the airport. They were scheduled to take off. That was the magnitude of urgency.
That's right.
And they were not getting the green light to actually go.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So they could not get over there fast enough.
Yeah.
There was an immediate, concrete, solid, and very admirable level of early leadership on a very serious and yet unknown crisis by Donald Trump and his administration. And it's been utterly misrepresented ever since January by Democrats whose primary focus is not the truth, is not the public welfare or health of the American people or the world, but has been trying to isolate and depict anything that's president does in some sort of negative light. I am trusting, I'm sure you are as well, that the American people are seeing through it and they're irritated by it and they're going to be heard loudly on November 3rd.
When you consider that there was nothing at all that they could stick at this president to pull him down over these past 3.5 years that they tried feverishly at every level, every turn, every moment to pull him down, when you consider there was nothing. So what they did is they attached themselves to this handy dandy virus coming out of China, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the program, what that is all about. But they attached themselves to that immediately. So what they did is they beyond politicized it. They obviously made it into a tool. That's all it was for them. So what they did is they put you talk about messaging. They put this message out there with the fact that the president wasn't taking this seriously. He always took it seriously. Oh, come on, my God. He shut the whole nation down, for God's sakes. I mean, this is just not something
but
to do.
They also aren't understanding the balanced nature of the communication that was necessary. Was the pandemic and the virus threatening? Yes, it was. And, you know, the president of the United States not out there every day with a whole team of interdepartmental heads communicating to the American people because he's not taking it seriously. He understood, and it was demonstrated in his actions that he took it seriously. But there are multiple objectives here, one of which was to keep the country going in some respect, to preserve, as could be done, the livelihoods of the American people who could be preserved. Let's be clear also. No one has a crystal ball here. Okay, you couldn't see in January what it was going to be in October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And most of the conjecture, the top conjecture was that this would clear up over the summer. It didn't. Not because of Donald Trump, because it didn't, because it's a complicated, fast acting, highly transmittable virus that has been immensely threatening and quite possibly was orchestrated precisely for that purpose.
But based on all that, what I want people to understand, the takeaway here is everything you say is accurate. What they did,
I mean, whether it was orchestrated or the origin of it remains unclear. But let me just say that as much as people say emphatically that it was not manufactured for this purpose, there's as much suggestive evidence that possibly it was.
The leftist machine attached themselves to this narrative because it is all they had. Mr. Johns, it's all they had. There was nothing else they could do. They tried everything else up to trying to impeach the president out of office. What the hell else were they going to do? So they quickly attached themselves to this virus coming out of China. And that's why we're dealing with a messaging problem now. So the real message of what we've just discussed we've got to get this message out to the American people. This whole thing has been politicized and then some. I mean, it's been tortured and obliterated. The president has been on this from the beginning. Michael, he's done everything appropriately, all the way from stopping the travel to the lockdown. He listened to the experts. He said it was patriotic. Wear your damn mask. Social distance. Shut the hell up. Move along. I mean, he said it all.
Well, and it's better than that, even. To have these questions presented to him like he's not listening to the science. How many times have we heard that?
Exactly.
Can we be clear about what the science was?
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization up until June and the CDC up until a period just before that wasn't neutral on masks, was saying, do not wear masks. We have a healthcare provider need and shortage. Please do not wear masks.
Right. That's right. I remember, buddy.
Those who were not wearing masks up until that point were following the science. And this president never said don't wear a mask. His position was never as hardened on that as the World Health Organization was.
There you go.
His was, hey, if it works, what are your local health, listen to your local healthcare officials? Because this was not one virus. This was very heavily centered in New York and New Jersey, Massachusetts to some extent when this thing started. Yeah. Washington State is almost likely where it originated.
Yeah.
There were huge areas of this country that were utterly unaffected for a period of time.
And
it would have been ridiculous to have those people thrown into a state of paranoia out there buying getting PPE equipment and preparing for something that was not manifesting there.
The whole mask thing was their means to
political prop.
It was to show totally to show that we're in a pandemic lockdown mode, and it was to make the economy decimate. Now, why do you think now, if anybody doesn't believe what I'm saying and what Michael's saying right now, think about all the blue states that have refused to open. Think about all the blue states. Think about all those states right now. I mean, the 60% of losses of businesses that have gone out of business that will never come back in these major cities and all these markets. Think about all those people that will still refuse to open up to this day. They want a lockdown, and they continue to move it along at a snail's pace. In the meantime, the red states opened up to get the economy moving because, again, the damage with a non-functioning economy and the damage of a non-functioning country is way beyond what this pandemic will do, Michael. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and so, you're spot on. You're spot on with the impact on particularly small businesses, which is really saddening. I mean, a lot of communities are attached, to these local, small, independently owned restaurants and bars that they've gone to for, that they went to, that their parents went to, that their grandparents went to. Some of those are. I've seen a number of individual cases like they're sadly not going to get through this, despite all of the effort.
Yeah.
In relief and the program that was designed to keep employees attached to it in the system through it.
Let me
give some good news. Wall Street Journal, end of the week, reporting that the number of new business applications for new businesses that are starting is at a 10-year high. The entrepreneurial spirit of the American people, which has been at the foundation of the creation of the greatest economy in the history of man, is still alive and beating. Yeah. That message is one that when President Trump ultimately emerges from this condition, recovered, hopefully, is able to project onto the American people with the greatest fighting spirit and final weeks of messaging into this campaign that's ever really existed in our life. This plot is intriguing. If this president gets through this and emerges with some degree of retrospective humility about this issue and explains this almost like you and I are discussing it now, that we're conflicting issues. We were lied to by China. We did not. It was this originated in China under some circumstances that we will ultimately learn and we'll communicate to the American people.
Right.
We were lied to by the World Health Organization, which was controlled and manipulated by China.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done everything within our power. Nothing in Joe Biden's message. You can go read his whole plan, which I've done. You can listen to everything he said in that first debate. You can listen to everything he said, which isn't much. Right. About this pandemic. He's got rhetorical, cliche-based criticisms of the president's management of it. He has zero degree of content or substantive policy suggestion. Even now,
that would have changed this outcome. And in fact, as cannot be said enough, in opposing the travel ban, Biden would have made the pandemic worse. We, as opposed to 200,000 plus, we'd be looking at numbers into the 2 million range, as was the conjecture back in March that that's what we would be facing.
Stay right there. More Viewpoint presents just after this pause.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, we join you back here on Viewpoint Presents. Here's Malcolm here along with Michael Johns. And so we're talking about these debates and the importance of this. We knew out of the gate there were going to be three presidential debates, so we hoped, and the one VP debate. We've had the one debate already. Again, part of the problem, Michael, I'm going to tell you, I talked about this in 2012. I talked to this about in 08. I talked about this in 04. I talked about this in 2000. So why is it every election season, every general election, the Presidential Debate Commission of the Grand Poobah get together, and the Grand Poobah, they decide these are going to be the debates, these are going to be the moderators. When you look at the sheet of moderators, they are always leftists, always to the left. And, I brought this up on my program the other day, if you might have heard. And I said, well, clearly there are. I'd be thrilled to moderate a debate. You'd be able to moderate. There are great conservative voices out there, very capable of moderating a debate. You take Chris Wallace. I mean, he, as you just pointed out in the previous segment, so biased. Never. The follow-ups were all against Trump. There were no follow-ups against Biden. And then he never brought up anything about the son of the Ukraine. It wasn't for the president bringing it up that we wouldn't have known anything. So you have that problem there. And now, you see, we've got this Steve Scully. Tell him who Steve Scully is.
All right. So Steve Scully has been, a C-SPAN anchor forever. I'm realistically sure I even appeared on his show once. He's an incredibly nice guy. He comes across as very, calm and balanced, and on the surface you might say he'd be ideal for it, but like almost everyone else in this profession, when you go back and look at his background, all it takes is an affiliation with George Washington University in DC. I caught it yesterday. You go and look at where did this guy start. He was an intern to Senator Ted Kennedy, who at the time was arguably probably the furthest left member of the Senate. And he worked for a senator named Joe Biden. So here, the outrage of this is not that Steve Scully, who quite honestly is a decent guy, aspires to moderate a presidential debate, clearly a highlight in his professional career. The outrage, as you said going into this, Malcolm, is that we have a presidential commission who's got like basically one charge: make sure that the moderator that you're selecting or proposing doesn't have an obvious conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. You're trying to tell me that you got all these major people of both parties who've been appointed to this commission and staff associated with it, mm-hmm. and financial resources, and no one took the time to read this dude's bio? That to me is unbelievable. And it's outrageous. And it's a basis to end this whole commission. I do think it's not the only way we go about it. You could have a situation where both major candidates alternatively propose moderators and formats, and they each have a shot at it, maybe do four of them, and each has, kind of two selections, like mm-hmm. you correctly said.
Right.
And, you know, and you might choose somebody like a Steve Scully.
So why don't they ever push back?
He's low key and it's not going to throw hard balls at anyone.
Why doesn't the right ever push back? I mean, what is the reason that the Republican Party never pushes back? I mean, they haven't pushed back on this point that I recall in a long time. I might have remembered some sort of a mention of this like way back. I don't know how many elections ago, but there's never any conversation about this. But I find this so egregious when you see the list of people that come out. And it's always the first thing on my mind, Michael. Why don't they push back? Why do they always take this? Do you know?
I think, sadly, it's reflective of the institutional challenge of politics itself, in the sense that every party and movement starts out as a set of grandiose, laudable, well-intentioned motives, turns into a structured organization, and then into a bureaucracy, and then into a company, and maybe ultimately into a racket in the worst cases. So we're still dealing with two major parties that have not been cleared out completely, and for whom the people closest to it are looking for the next consulting gig, not to necessarily win. I'm shocked, and I'm not, without getting into specific cases, the number of campaign managers around this country working on some really key Senate and U.S. House races. Mm-hmm. If you look at what their win-loss record is, you would never hire these people. It's exactly astonishing to me, but it's reflective of the fact that we have too much power at the highest of levels. It almost needs to be upturned. The triangular system of government, we need the strength of it to be on the grassroots level with the people. The local parties even don't have enough influence, control, or resources.
Yeah,
that's the issue. So when you say, like, where, and then we have a leadership crisis. Mm-hmm. And part of that is based on the fact that money corrupts the system. You show me the political leader in this country who is going to stand up despite, who can't be silenced by money. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about a few of them. They're out there, but they're hard to find.
You know, the left gets away with so much. It really is sickening to me as I'm hearing you mention all of these points here. It really is. It's more than unfortunate. It isn't right at all. And I'm always wondering why the right doesn't push back harder. This is a perfect case of what we're talking about here. And I wonder in this particular case, I'm sure coming into this program here, Michael, they were probably concerned that they didn't want to give any reason probably to push back because they would have taken an exit plan. We knew that Biden and his people did not want him to really debate. We also knew that he had to debate because it would be obviously to dispel some of the very many founded rumors. They would have to debate or it would be a problem. Now, since that first one came out, they have started to use, if you've watched the narrative in the media, right, over the past week or plus here, the narrative is that, oh, my God, Trump is just, he doesn't shut up or he talks too much or, and of course, the Democrat operatives, who are always smart. They're always syncing. They always sync together with their program here. Right away, they're on the microphone saying, well, there's no way Joe Biden should debate again with this man. He wasn't respectful. He talked over him. No, he shouldn't debate again. So my question is now, does Biden use this as an excuse to get out of the next two? Does that sort of happen or do they find some sort of a way? Because let's face it, he was just so-so. I mean, Biden wasn't sharp and witty and he wasn't any of that at the debate, I would suggest to you. He got by. If I was going to grade him, I'd give him a C. What would you give him?
Debate failed. But it didn't. He was unable to control either side, and he was unable to present questions that were sufficiently balanced that allowed the candidates to be quiet. So if I'm Donald Trump and I'm going into that debate, no way am I not raising Hunter Biden. All right. Now you're into this debate and you see that he's wanting to talk about the Paris agreement that was tossed out years ago, right, which is not really on the minds of any voting American, and he's going to let this issue slide. It's a problem. And it's not that Chris Wallace is some covert progressive activist. It's the problem is that these people are isolated. They think they know conservatives. They think they're connected with the American people. They're not. They're not. They don't socialize with these people. They're not friends with these people. They don't communicate or have lunch with these people. When that guy goes in there, what's on his mind really? Is his mind, how do I be the best balanced moderator in the history of presidential debates? Or is it more likely, how do people in my own profession feel I did? You think that guy wants to walk out of there and sit and have his colleagues look at him and go, you were soft on Trump, you bastard? Because that's what they would say, and that's how they would view it. And so once you have a culture within a profession that rewards a particular ideology, what kind of imbecile is going to walk into that and defy that culture?
And that's what's happened with the entire, the entire media industry, as you say, is so twisted.
More than that, every one of these institutions that we've talked about has been overcome by that. When you want to talk about the depth of the crisis that American conservatives, patriotism, and, and this country itself confronts right now, it's that we have allowed those cultures to take over the most influential institutions in this country, of which media is just one. Yeah, there's a reason that the 25, 30, 40,000 people show up to hear Trump and Biden can't get 100 in a high school gymnasium.
Exactly. Amen.
The people are with, that's the saddening, sickening reality of the current predicament, is that the power that exists in the elite institutions, not even of our own country, but of the world, do not want to see the American people get through with this message of an America First agenda. That's why they've been all over this president, literally from day one, down the stairs, critiquing the announcement speech. He was a threat to a system that is always behind closed doors, collaborated and conspired with very similar agenda items. Donald Trump was not trusted in that capacity. When he was in the other capacity, you go look, you know, Jesse Jackson giving him a big slap on the back. You know, you're the man. You know, all of these elitists, politicians, et cetera, more than happy to compliment him publicly. Look at what Mitt Romney said about him when he was looking for his support back in 2012. These guys changed the tune when you put a little authority into his hands, because that breaks up a system that they've controlled for four decades at least.
Yeah, you're so right, Michael, with what you say there. And, you know, the more every day, and I want to tell you something, every day we move forward, I recognize internally, I recognize not only the momentous moment that we're in, the historical nature of this time period that we're living through, Michael, that you and I report on regularly, right? But I recognize the contribution and the importance and the value of what a President Donald J. Trump has brought to this game of politics. And really, it is what he has done to offset all of this and the progress he's made. I mean, he's got to be, I mean, I would suggest to you, the most conservative president. Certainly, I don't remember anyone being more conservative than this president. I don't think Ronald Reagan was more conservative than him.
I think we're out of those ideological boxes. You know, I think, you know, I mean, for instance, were the trade tariffs conservative or progressive? I mean, once upon a time, that was a key issue to unions in this country, and conservatives were opposed to it. Is securing the border, I think it's a conservative initiative, but you haven't seen any conservative political figure put a whole lot of emphasis on it. That's even Reagan. I mean, Reagan didn't secure that border. He made an effort at it. Ultimately, it was unsuccessful and moved on.
But this president
in fairness, it was those issues, you know, and that was the time when I began engagement. Those issues were not as profound back then as they become. You know, problems, when you let them go, snowball. Then they become overwhelming and they require this sort of decisive action that Trump emerged. I'll differ with you only on one point. Is Trump a great man, leader, and president? Yes, no doubt, indisputable. But you have to footnote that with the fact that he is an ambassador for 63 million people who went out and voted for him, who finally, after watching election after election of Republican nominees come forward, John McCain, Mitt Romney, even George W. Bush, watching all of this rhetoric transforming either into political defeats or administrations that really ultimately didn't change their lives in any substantive way. Obama, same thing. Remember, he had the people passing out at those rallies in 2008? Those people passing out with excitement at those rallies in 2008 never benefited from his presidency. And Joe Biden and Barack Obama never spent 10 seconds thinking about him. Poverty up on his watch, food stamp utilization up on his watch. The poor got poorer on Biden and Obama's watch. And the American people, that needs to be drilled home in a major way.
Yeah, I mean, there again, there's a lot of messaging that needs to happen in the next many days. This all has to get out there. I mean, I do believe we are on the right side of history, and we are certainly on the right side of momentum for our great nation. And this president, I do believe, has just gotten started. I think there could be a tremendous administration in the second term. And I have to believe, Michael, and to all of you out there, my fellow Americans, that he will indeed win a second term. I have to believe that in my heart of hearts. And, you know, but let's not take that for granted. Let's all jump up and get ready to go the extra mile to do what we have to do to make this election victorious. Now, what we want to do is take a pause here. And so within all these debates, we'll see what happens to wrap that piece of it up here. I don't know if I'm looking forward to this next one, but we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. They're also talking about a mute button there or some other darn thing, Michael. So God only knows what they do there, along with the Steve Scully guy. I don't really
know. That's great. Give them that power.
Viewpoint Presents right here with Michael Johns and yours truly here. And, you know, we bring this to you every week. On Sundays now, again, it's a 2-hour block, but this one here is at 11 and 7 on Sundays on America Out Loud Talk Radio. All of our programming now goes to podcast, and it does go to podcast immediately. So Sunday afternoon, just after the 2 o'clock hour Eastern time, you can get this anywhere in the world on podcast networks and right at the top of AmericaOutLoud.com. I invite you in every Sunday to have coffee with me Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Viewpoint this Sunday. This is our lead-in program, our 2-hour block, 10 to 12. Sunday morning, say, have coffee with us. And then Michael will be on with us. And we're enjoying this, having a good time, but we have a lot of information to get out to you every week. So thank you for being part of this. Always just want to take that moment to give you the pieces of this thing. And don't forget, too, we're on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart Podcast, so many networks you can get this and come right into your box there or subscribe at Apple Podcast as well here. All right, we'll take up next this whole thing that really nobody is talking about, and that is the origins. Well, number one is the origins of this thing, why we're in this position to begin with. There's a lot that's happening right now in the conversation of China. And very, very interesting. Also, Michael had an interesting, he talks a lot to the Chinese media out there. Very fascinating interview he had out there. We'll get into all of that next and talk to you about this here, the origins and also how we should be dealing with China moving forward. We'll take all that up next, friends, on Viewpoint Presents, just after this pause. It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
American Democracy in Action. Viewpoint Presents Election 2020.
We joined you back here on Viewpoint Presents. You know, I just say to Michael here, it seems like we turn the mic hot, we join you out there, and it's the quickest hour in talk radio. It goes by just about immediately. It does feel that way here. I would imagine it feels that way for you out there as well. But that's what happens when you're having this sort of conversation, the level of intensity. And a lot of that is because Michael Johns and myself, I mean, we care passionately about this nation, number one. We care passionately about the conservative movement and patriotism. And we are on the good in the fight of good and evil. And that's why you feel the passion here in our talk here. So, Michael, this whole virus, obviously many call and the president refers to as the China virus, but the coronavirus or the whatever you want to call it, there are a myriad of names, COVID-19, whatever it is. The initial talk was the bat and the soup, and that it was the Wuhan seafood market. It happened to, was just accidental and innocently escaped And of course, they didn't lock down the country. They locked down their country, but they didn't lock down the world. They let people travel all over the world, including here. Seems to me like, you know, the question becomes, was this a full-blown biological attack, or was this just an accidental, incidental? What do you think about this with China? I mean, I've reported on this, and I'm clearly on the record about what I think as far as a biological weapon goes. What do you think?
Well, one thing is that's clear to me is, you know, we've not gotten honest sharing of information or reporting out of China from the very beginning of this. And you mentioned Chinese media. I mean, I do routinely engage with debates, including with individuals who are sort of designated spokespersons of the Chinese Communist Party. And, you know, as recently as August, their position in response to my trying to forge maybe some consensus on this, just on the basic facts, they're continuing to deny that this originated in China, which is a demonstrable fact. I mean, there's no one, despite what they say, who has observed this, who hasn't already acknowledged that. And yet it's important to go through the sequence of events, right? So if you go back in the chronology and time moves on, you start to forget these things. You say, when this started to emerge in Wuhan, what was the initial reaction of the government? Well, the first thing they did was that there were at least 8 medical professionals that had arisen to speak out about in an alarming fashion about what this potentially represented. They did it, I think, with benevolent intention, and many of those individuals disappeared, and we haven't heard from them. Many of their, the videos they did and the reporting they did immediately swept off of Chinese media and unavailable. So they sought to silence anyone who spoke out on it. Then when you look at the actual facilities that sought to basically trace the genome of the virus, they were reporting on this. In fact, it was an article they put out in February that in Nature magazine. They were shut down immediately once they began sharing any information with the public about the nature of this, which would have been immensely helpful for the development of testing kits much earlier than they were developed. And then you look at the policies that you just pointed out. What did they do? They convened a meeting of a top meeting of the CCP in January and put into place several initiatives. One was they locked down Wuhan. Two was they did not lock down international flights out of China. So they continued to allow the very people that they thought presented a risk to the rest of the country from that they did not want leaving that region. They allowed those individuals to come here. What's the origin of that? Well, that's at least the second step in the origin. How the actual virus was developed is an intriguing question. And lots of things point to the virology center in Wuhan that has been engaged in extensive research related to this. Then they lied to the world. They put together basically a disinformation campaign, as they often do, to try to blame this on the United States, which is a astonishingly laughable proposition, but that is what they did. And then they ordered all of these facilities to destroy all of the viral samples and to remain silent about it. They also made it clear to countries of the world that if they were blaming China or unduly critical of China's management of this, that they would shut off supply chain for PPE and other steps. Much of the equipment that they sent to the rest of the world, I mean, 70-80% flawed equipment, that's not like an innocent, whoops, we made a mistake error. Seems to me to be suggestive of a more systematic and diabolical plan to lead people into believing they were protected when they weren't. So there's a lot of indications here that are suggestive. I mean, if you were prosecuting this as a case in a court of law, you would say, is there a motive, right? That'd be your first question. Do they have a motive to bring down the American economy and to bring down the
credibility of the American president? Absolutely they do. This president's standing up to China tougher than any president in our lifetime.
Yeah.
So motives there. Then you go into the sequence of events, mm-hmm. and you say, does it suggest a good faith effort to act as a global, responsible global citizen of the world? Absolutely not, including to the World Health Organization, where they have binding agreements as a member to be reporting these things. They did not allow the CDC in. They did not allow the World Health Organization in. And they disappeared the individuals within China who sought to warn the world about the magnitude of the potential problem.
Well, everybody has to understand, and you should know out there, that China is a closed market and the media is all state run. And I mean, they control the narrative. You don't have social media flowing out there and open opinions and thoughts. That just doesn't exist in China. The interview you did, that particular one I watched back in August, by the way, Michael, was with CGTN, and it was interesting to watch this. And but you're seeing a lot of Chinese spokespeople like this gentleman here that was on that particular show, Wang Kang, I guess it is, a chief reporter for the Global Times as well. And it was an interesting conversation going on there. But, you know, the thing is, they only have one narrative, and that is they're trying to push the blame onto others, as you say, trying to point it out. Well, how do you know it started in China? Well, I reported on this back in March, mid-March. This is when there were so many unknowns. I had received a lot of high-level information, intelligence in here over a period of about 3 weeks. Throughout the month of March, end of February, and I was really holding on to it before I released it, that we could verify it, make sure it was accurate, because it was really out there. Because at that point, remember, Michael, they were talking about a bat in the soup. Remember that early sign that was the time, right? That was what they said. And then there was this, you know, and then you've been hearing the reports of the seafood.
The wet market,
the seafood meat market in Wuhan. Well, as it is, there was a bigger story here about, again, what you mentioned here, biological espionage, where Chinese agents had really stolen this virus from another lab in another country. And I did a whole program on this. You remember this, don't you? Back in March, remember? That program is called The Virus Threats as a Weapon. And it was pretty in your face. I put a disclaimer on this program that said, this episode may be distressing to some people. It is a straightforward look at how China came into contact with the virus and their global aspirations. This was a move to move. It was their global aspirations. There's no doubt in my mind, Michael, this was a move for China to flex their muscles and to make their move predominantly. Why? Because of what you said moments ago. Trump was the first one to stand up to the Chinese in any capacity or category. This president has done it. He has been tremendous in how he's gone against the Chinese. And he became a threat. And the progress we were making by holding those trade agreements, because the Chinese, they have taken advantage, and they have really, you know, they've had their cake and they've been eating it too for a long time through a lot of administrations, Michael. So Donald Trump and what was happening here in America was a big threat to them. And
huge. It was breaking up their whole strategic plan was dissolving, because Trump knew the strategic plan and was systematically dissecting in it. And it wasn't just the unfair trade agreements, but the vast intellectual property theft and the magnitude of infiltration that they have in American academia, in American companies, in literally a New York police department officer arrested a couple of weeks back, operating as an agent of China. The FBI director, who you and I have had some concerns about, at least in his congressional testimony on the issue of China, was very forthright that the magnitude of investigations into this government's activity in the United States is overwhelming. It is exhaustive. There is almost, and that's a product of, is that a, who's, what's that a product of? It's a product of presidents from both parties before Trump basically turned a blind eye to this whole thing.
With all that said, Michael, our media has not hit against them. So when we ask the question, why isn't the objective Americans rage China right now, where this thing originated from, and why they've been so cavalier about the whole thing? What do you say to that?
Well, look at look at the Wall Street Journal has, one of the better opinion pieces comes out earlier this year. Basically discussing not even as much detail as you and I are providing, but saying that this, had its origins in China, and basically blows up this whole narrative that China was somehow a responsible contributor to some global order. meaning they're very internationalist in nature, in their approach and focus. And even now they're bragging of their management of this outrageously when they've been the source of it. But the point is that how they respond to that, they responded by kicking out American correspondents, in Beijing and elsewhere in China. I mean, they respond to criticism in very, very aggressive ways.
Right.
And they mm-hmm. leap praise and many times lucrative financial benefits on individuals who have praise and support for what they're doing, which is one of the reasons, as you and I have spoken about, when you go through the experts that we've relied upon on this, all the way back to Henry Kissinger, they've been dead wrong on every single one of these issues, in downplaying and minimizing the magnitude of the emerging threat, and also in misrepresenting what a big, large, powerful, second largest economy in the world, China, really ultimately means to the United mm-hmm. States. It has meant the loss of jobs, it has meant diminished influence, it has meant American people hurting, and now it represents a significant national security threat, the biggest national security threat in the world, according to just about every security expert mm-hmm. whose judgment I trust.
Yeah, that's it. A national security threat. That's exactly what it is. This is the biggest one to come our way. This is what we're going to be facing right now. And when you think of how President Trump has handled China in such a way, and here we are, you have to think now, what's the next 4 years? Here's some questions I want you all to think about. What's the next 4 years going to be like under a Biden administration that, God forbid, there won't be one, right? Exactly. But could you imagine him dealing tough with China? Of course not. I mean, he's been in bed with China for the longest time, so that's not going to happen. And so obviously, just on this basis alone, who is the right leadership moving forward on this big conversation Michael and I are having about China? Well, that is clearly President Donald Trump. There is no other option there, people. So this is big, what's going on with China now. And there is no reverse course here. There is no going back. It has got to be full steam ahead. And again, we have to put American interests first, not China interests first. It's got to be American interest. That, my fellow Americans, is the reason Donald Trump became our 45th president, is because he was willing to put American interests first. He resonated and he spoke to the people out here, to you all out there. That's the reason this country now is taking this turn, and where we are now, where we are at a good point where we can do some good and really give back to the American people and be bringing jobs back and manufacturing and bringing all the things that have been gutted out in our nation. So there's a lot to talk about, a lot more to think about with China. It's not going away. We'll take a lot more of that up, Michael, and I will. Thank you again here for being with us on the mission here on Viewpoint, and we will continue on here. A lot of news coming up. Busy, busy election cycle. I need you to do your part. Push this out there. Tell people about the program, the broadcast, and all that's happening at America Out Loud. Thank you again, my fellow Americans. It's time to get involved and get loud.